Welcome to the Brave Parenting Podcast, an examination of the Bible and how parents can apply God's word to raising children in a culture saturated with media and technology. Hello, everyone. Welcome. So glad you're here. Today, we're diving into the world of video gaming, but not just any type of gaming, specifically gaming on a handheld portable device, such as a Nintendo Switch or the Steam Deck. These are the two devices we're going to be talking about today. Now, maybe you've heard of them, but if you're a little older, like me, maybe you remember the Nintendo Game Boy that came out in 1989. If you're younger, a little younger than me, you might remember the PSP, the PlayStation Portable, that came out in 2005. And then also the Nintendo DS, which came out around the same time. But even if you haven't had one of these handheld portable gaming devices, I feel like I can probably say with certainty that you have played at least one game on a mobile device, such as the iPhone or an Android or maybe even a tablet since they have been released. In some ways, I think even really in many ways, the smartphone is the ultimate handheld gaming device. But of course, serious gamers will dismiss mobile gaming as novice. And that's probably true, right? Because I definitely don't consider myself a gamer, but I have played a game on the iPhone. I know when it first came out and I got my first phone in 2008, I remember playing Words with Friends. I thought that was the coolest thing ever because I love Scrabble. Scrabble is my favorite board game. I just love words. And then I recently had a little stint where I did Wordle until I got tired of doing that. But I can even say that I have played a game on a mobile device. But over the last 10 years, these handheld gaming devices have just been reimagined and updated with all of this latest technology and now re-released, allowing these quote-unquote serious gamers, those who play on PCs and on consoles, to now take their games wherever they go. Media outlets have deemed today's handheld market to be the, quote, golden age of gaming on the go. So what about those handhelds that we do have today? Well, we're going to talk about the two of them, Nintendo Switch and Steam Deck. Now, in 2017, Nintendo released the Switch. And then last year, summer of 2025, they released the Switch 2, so it's an updated version. Both are a hybrid console portable device. Now, when the Switch screen is docked on its docking station, it connects to, say, the television for traditional gameplay like a normal console would. But then when the Joy-Cons, which are sort of, I guess you could call it like the joystick, but they're called Joy-Cons, are connected to each side of the Switch screen, it can then be taken off the dock and played in handheld mode. Frankly, I think it's a pretty genius idea to combine the two together, which is probably why the Switch has been so popular. The Switch 2 has reportedly sold 6 million units in its first year, making it the second highest ever in device sales, just under the Game Boy Advance in 1995. Now, just a side note, because I graduated high school in 1996, and I have racked my brain. And I'm curious to know if any of you have any recollection of kids, high schoolers, teenagers, adults playing handheld gaming devices in the 90s. I personally don't. I don't remember seeing anybody have these, and maybe my memory is just not that clear. I am getting older, but they came out in the 89, and they've been advancing ever since. So now you can buy today a Nintendo Switch 2 for $450, or you can pay $500 with a sort of like Super Mario Brothers game bundle. Now, I'll get back to the Nintendo Switch a little bit later. But now let me talk about the other handheld device, which is the Steam Deck. Now, in 2022, Steam released its first handheld device called the Deck or Steam Deck. It was updated in 2023 to have a new screen, and that device remains the most popular option on the market, and it's really the most popular option and competitor to the Switch 2 handheld console. Now, maybe you have not heard of Steam. I have done Brave Parenting guides to Steam. I probably need to go back and update it, but let me just tell you a little bit. So Steam, I would describe it as essentially like the Netflix or the App Store for computer games, right? So instead of going to a store and buying a game through a disc or a cartridge like we used to do, you can just download from the Steam app and the Steam store on the browser. You can download this to your computer, anything from their massive library of games. You purchase it, you download it, and then you play it through the Steam app on your computer. Now, the Steam software is free to download, and there are thousands of free-to-play games available, although the most popular and premium games, of course, cost money. But Steam is more than just a store to buy games. It's like this entire gaming ecosystem that also functions as a social network, right? Users can add friends, they can have chat sessions, they can join game-specific forums. Now, if you're thinking, well, that doesn't really sound like a platform for kids, you're absolutely right. But nevertheless, the minimum age is 13, right? Like all things on the internet, somehow 13 is almost adulthood. Steam does offer parental controls. And like we just recently talked about with Apple and Google parental controls, this is really how they kind of save face, but at the same time, lure kids onto the platform saying, hey, it's great. Kids can come on here, right? We've got parental controls. And that makes parents believe that they care about children, that these are controls are going to keep their kids safe. But inevitably, it just creates a part-time job or full-time job for the parents to monitor, control, approve, and just manage what their kid is doing on the platform. But here's the kicker. It's not just the gaming or the social aspect of the platform that is a concern and a reason to have parental controls. Steam also contains thousands of games tagged with sexual or adult content, including games that are pornographic or porn adjacent, as they say. So Valve, who owns Steam, they have no ban at all on adult sexual content. The only thing that they prohibit is nude or sexually explicit images of real people, right? But fictional or animated pornographic content, adult content is allowed, although it has to be labeled and it's supposed to be age gated. Now, my husband, who is familiar with Steam, he researched the accessibility of these mature games on Steam. Now, my husband does have a Steam account. I think he's had it for probably as long as we've been married. But what he did was got on an incognito window on his browser just to see what it was like if you were not creating an account, what you would be able to see. And he was able to view players live streaming as well as like gameplay clips of some of these mature games that were sexually explicit. In fact, to quote Ryan, after I asked him to do this, like, hey, tell me what can be seen by the average kid if they go and look, he was like, you would not believe how many porn-based video games there are on Steam. It is insane. So my point here is that because Steam is a public web store and a community platform, this whole Steam ecosystem, right, any child with unrestricted internet access can view that content. Even if it's not playing the game, you can see clips and live streaming and just all this, other, even just images of it, which of course can serve as a back door or almost like an invitation, a temptation to this sexualized gaming content. Yikes, that is totally not what we want, right? So now you take this entire Steam ecosystem and then you put it in a handheld device instead of being on a stationary gaming PC as it was before. And voila, you have the Steam Deck. The Steam Deck runs $789 for the smaller memory, 512 gigabytes, or for $949, you can get a 1 terabyte Steam Deck. Now, the dock is sold separately for $79. There's all these other accessories, so you can easily run up way over $1,000 on this handheld gaming device. Now, before I talk about whether or not I recommend any of these devices, there's much more we need to talk about There's several things, points that I want to make, because I want you to know not only what these devices are, if your child brings them up, if they ask for one, if you hear other parents talking about them, yeah, it's good to know at least the basics, but there are much deeper reasons as well. So let me go through. I have three big reasons. First, if immediately you're like, yeah, no, I'm never going to allow a handheld gaming device like a Switch or a Steam Deck, and that's fine. You can totally make that stance, and I think that's a healthy stance for your child. But at the same time, if you make that stance, you need to be equally against a smartphone with gaming apps. Because just because a phone has other functionalities, it doesn't make any different than the fact, because it's available all the time, everywhere, for gaming. If you have games on it, they can play those games all the time. Now, granted, I know you can have some parental controls on there, but if we allow a child a smartphone for communication purposes as the primary reason, there should not be any gaming apps allowed, right? If we're not going to allow a Switch or a Steam Deck, we should not allow games on their phone. And I know this, maybe you think, yeah, this goes without saying, but it's just so easy to forget because of the convenience of these devices. Like maybe, for example, you're going on a road trip this summer, and your kids are going to be in the car for a long time. So you allow a game or maybe two, and you're like, just for this road trip. But then by the time you get back from vacation, you're exhausted and you had forgotten that you allowed that game. And then you wonder, why haven't I seen my child? Why are they so quiet? And they're hiding out somewhere and you don't even know where. Well, chances are they're still playing that game. And I know this from experience. I have been in this exact scenario and made the mistake of forgetting to remove something that I allowed for a short temporary road trip. So I say that in love from experience. If you make those short-term decisions, and I get that, to meet a need on a road trip, just make sure you're removing games. Children do not need the temptations of games everywhere all of the time with so little effort on their phones. Okay, number two, these personal handheld devices pose unique risks, more risks than any sort of like public media consumption or gaming when it's done in the presence of others. So these personal handheld devices, you know, whether that be the Switch or a Steam Deck or whether it be an iPhone, it removes friction that is good and necessary for children, right? Because if it's not stationary in the family room connected to the TV where everybody can see, right? These handhelds, they can go into the bedroom, hide in the closet, they can go in the bathroom, the car, school, church, grandparents' house, in bed, under the covers, right? It turns gaming from like a pastime or just something you might do for a little bit into a companion, right? It's like their constant companion. And accessibility to the device trains a child to think that every empty moment must be filled because it can be filled, right? Not to mention, these handheld devices, whether, again, it be the Switch or a phone, they're inherently isolating. And what I mean by that is it's the child and the device, face to screen to face, lost in a virtual world together, as if the real world doesn't exist. You can get lost just between you and the screen. Now, I know, yeah, kids can connect with friends in the game, but you know, these friends, they're not next to them. They're not playing next to them, breathing next to them, embodied and sharing the same space and time. They are voices over chat across a chasm of the virtual world, right? Which is really no different than followers on social media or friends that you're communicating with, but you don't really know over social media, right? So you can argue that, you know, friends in real life that you hang out with at school will often connect and play on these games together. So it's actually different, you know, but again, the reality is that the time spent in a game, it doesn't translate as quality time and embodied relationships. It just doesn't. And we know this from the past 10 to 15 years. That virtual experience with a friend, whether it be gaming, whether it be chatting, whether it be over social media, is not the same. This is why we still have loneliness amongst young people. This is why they have a fear of talking to people in real life, why they are so risk averse, and why they can spend so much time socializing online but cannot pick up the phone and make an appointment or walk into the library and ask for a library card. It's just not the same as real life face-to-face relationships. So when these games end, right, the child is told to turn the switch off, turn the Steam Deck off, or turn the iPhone off or whatever, they leave this virtual world. They look up from their screen back to reality and they're alone. They're still alone, but they're not okay with that aloneness. Even though they were alone in the game, it feels different, right? The real world isn't as validating. It doesn't feel as victorious as the virtual world does. It gives them a false sense of purpose inside that game. And so the real world feels so much worse, so much more terrible, and I don't like it. And it just perpetuates this game cycle. And again, the same can be said about social media. This is why I've argued that video games is just another version of social media. They share so many of the same features. So it's not, you know, right to say, no, you know, it's, you can't be on social media, but hey, you can play these video games. The features are all the same. The risks are all the same. This is like the contrast between playing Super Mario Kart on a Nintendo Switch, right? In the family room, on the television, the public area, with your friends or your siblings, maybe even with your parents. The kind of quote virtual experience of that is not nearly as immersive, right? When you're playing with others embodied next to you, we can still have real conversations. You can reach out, you can touch them. Then when you're playing online with no one next to you, and the only thing you have to feel and touch is your hands on that device. And when you're playing on a television in the family room, of course, supervision is going to be much easier. Mutual accountability is going to be easier. Secrecy is not nearly as likely. And it's this type of activity that actually builds memories, positive memories, enjoyable experiences, because you're sharing the same space and time with others. This online only kind of social virtual gaming world, it just doesn't build the same memories, the same connections, and the same bonds with other people. And also these handheld gaming devices reward a child's brain by offering this escape, this sense of secrecy, right? The brains reward it for the more they consume, and they're rewarded in this sort of fantasy world, and they're constantly stimulated. And these rewards, like I said before, in isolation, it just creates a cycle of perpetual play because reality doesn't feel good. Isolation and reality, the idea of being alone with your thoughts or, you know, even like, quote, alone with another person, it just feels too much. It feels too difficult to handle. It's as like this virtual screen and the virtual game almost as like a sort of a handicap, a crutch that makes everything so much easier because it's, you can present yourself as someone else. You can listen back to the podcast I did on the avatars and how people create their identities there. And so it just becomes this whole other thing and it's not reality. And so when the gaming device is portable and it's convenient and it's so enjoyable, why not just keep playing? Why not play everywhere? Because you can. And I think that's exactly why the advertisements for these devices show people, adults and children, right, playing at home, playing while their, you know, feet are dangling in the pool, while they're at the park, on the airplane. As we've said many times on this podcast, right, convenience is not the greatest good in life, right? Convenience, efficiency, and ease, they don't develop the virtues that we want in children, the virtues of self-control, of perseverance, resiliency, fortitude, patience, discernment, and wisdom. So it's like if your kids are going to play any video games at all, they need the friction of a stable console in a community space of the home. It cannot be portable if we really want them to develop real-world virtue. especially relational skills. And that leads me to the third reason why I wanted to talk about these personal handheld gaming devices, and that is the role modeling of parents. So the Steam Deck is specifically marketed by users in the Steam community as the solution to the inconvenience of parenting. Now, I'm not talking about parents giving kids a Steam Deck like you would give a toddler an iPad, you know, to keep their attention occupied or so that you just don't have to parent. No, I'm talking about parents who love the Steam Deck because it lets them, the parents, continue gaming during the bits and pieces of time in the life of a parent. Let me explain. In my general search for parenting guides for Steam and the Steam Deck, I found one blog post that literally frames the Steam Deck as, quote, the perfect device for the busy parent. And again, I immediately thought they meant, hey, busy parent, give your kid the Steam device so that you can get done what you need to get done, was my thought on where this was going. But he goes on to say that the Steam Deck lets parents satisfy their gaming compulsions without becoming a detriment to domestic responsibilities. And then he adds, at least that's what I tell myself. So that was interesting. I thought, okay, wow. And that led me to a whole host of online content confirming this narrative. As a parent on Reddit, who praised the Steam Deck because it allowed him to be gaming wherever my kids are, he said. He said he has the ability to pause and resume instantly when they need something from me. In the same discussion, you know, another father in the comments of that was like, I can't wait to introduce video games to my four-month-old son. And then there was another Reddit post that said the user said that he cleared more than 200 hours of games while his newborn slept on his lap during the baby's first 6 months. Again, praising the Steam Deck for the availability to do that. Another father said that the Steam Deck saved gaming for him because he could sneak in 30 minutes or an hour, use it while his wife cooked, while the baby napped, and while he's in the bathroom. Okay. Then there are also YouTube videos, you know, explicitly titled around this same idea. One's titled, "The Steam Deck is the best," in all caps, "gift for gamer parents." Another one, "Best Steam Deck games for new dads." And another one, "The only way I can game anymore." And then within Steam itself, multiple discussions follow the same trajectory where there's one where this father is asking the community members, what's the right age for children to have their own Steam Deck? And he's asking because he says that my kids see me playing all the time and now they want their own. Okay. Now I get it. Parenting is hard. It's hard. Some days your brain just craves any kind of stimulation, intelligent stimulation. If you stay home with the kids, you crave adult interaction. And yeah, babies, toddlers, yeah, they interrupt everything. They need constant attention. You have to have patience. You have to have flexibility. It takes so much self-control, right? But that's what parenting is. It's inherently sacrificial. That's true. Whether you are a Christian or not, parenting requires sacrifice. Now, I realize that these Reddit posts and Steam community forums and even YouTube videos are not representative of all fathers. However, as Christians, I just think it's important to recognize that we can't think of ourselves as above reproach, right? A video game obsession or addiction can just as easily happen in a Christian's life as it could happen to a non-believer, right? Any of us are only just a few bad decisions away from any type of online media obsession or problematic use, as they like to say, right? Because if it's not gaming, it could be pornography. And if it's not porn, well, then maybe it's radical politics. Maybe it's gambling. Maybe it's shopping, fame-seeking voyeurism, or a romantic AI chatbot relationship, right? It's all a way for Satan to ask The question, did God really say that you shouldn't watch porn? Did God really say you can't play video games in front of your kids? Did God really say you can't smoke weed while you're parenting or bet on sports, right? That's what Satan does. So because any of us can fall under Satan's deception at any time, it's important to address this reality because the temptations are everywhere if we don't have strong convictions. So whether it's an iPhone, it's your work laptop, or if it is that handheld gaming device, like a Steam Deck or like a Switch, the greatest lie of technology that we need to remember is that it is the solution and not the problem. That is the lie that we're constantly fed. Technology is the solution to our inconvenience. Technology is the solution to our inefficiency. Technology is the solution to our aging. Technology is the solution to our infertility. It's the solution for everything. I could go on. And somehow we believe that scrolling social media is the solution to feeling a little discontent, you know, instead of believing that it is the source of our discontentment. Or we believe that Netflix binging is going to give us peace and rest from the stress of life. And we don't recognize that it may be the reason we feel stressed and busy all the time because we're wasting time binging. And maybe we can fall into the belief that gaming is how we can still find fulfillment in the monotonous days of raising babies and toddlers and young children, rather than believing the truth, which is that children are the source of our fulfillment. Now, I'm not saying that any parent who video games or who has a Switch or a Steam Deck or who, you know, does any of this is sinning. We have to ask ourselves, is this online activity actually helping me as a parent gain true peace and rest? Or is it establishing an expectation in my heart and a behavior pattern that's not going to stop when the child's old enough to recognize what's happening, right? An infant is not going to know that you're gaming while they sleep on your lap, right? An 18-month-old will. They will recognize that they do not have your attention. They will see that your affection is for the handheld gaming device or for the phone, right? A child who watches their parent treat gaming or the phone as that thing that must be preserved at all costs, right? Squeezing it into every silent moment, returning to it every day, protecting it, carrying it around. Well, that child is being formed by the parent's behavior, and they will grow up to imitate it. And I get it too. There are some parents who are totally fine with this. Some parents want nothing more than their child to be a gamer, to go pro and make, you know, millions of dollars as a popular streamer. Just like there are family vloggers out there who love to put their children online. They want them to be famous. They want them to have their own channel, or they want them to be an influencer, and they help and they support that. But I'm not talking about those because I don't necessarily think those kind of people are listening. But what I think could happen is if we're the parents who make the distinction of it's okay for me, but it's not okay for my kids, right? I'm okay with gaming as an adult, which is true. You can game as an adult, but I don't want my child doing this. So for example, what if the father, you know, it could be the mom, right? But statistically, it's usually the men, recognizes that, yes, the Steam ecosystem, that is not appropriate for children, for my 10-year-old, my 13-year-old. And so they maintain rules for their gaming use. They're not allowed to play. And this becomes a sort of do as I say, not as I do scenario. But the reality is it doesn't work, right? The truth is that the rules that you establish don't teach nearly as much as the modeling does. And the best case scenario is modeling plus the rules. Like, that's the best way to teach the child, because children will inevitably learn to love what their parents love. If a parent loves sports and sports is on the television all of the time, then the child is going to end up loving the sports because that's what they're exposed to. and they see the parents' love for that, right? So even if it's not video game specific loves, kids are going to learn the habit. And what are those habits that we might not recognize? Well, one is that silence is for technology or for gaming, for scrolling, right? Waiting, if you have to wait for something, well, that's time to pick up the device. Boredom, pick up the device. And then of course, the worst belief at all is that it doesn't matter who you neglect. If you need it, you need that fix for gaming or scrolling, take it, right? Take care of yourself. And honestly, whatever you want to call this, if you want to call it self-care, whether, you know, I need to relax, I need to take the edge off. But what it is neglect. Because being the parent who is physically present, but emotionally, mentally, and spiritually absent, they are neglecting the God-given role as the parent to shepherd, to teach, to disciple, to train, and to love, right? Love requires attention. Paul explicitly says in Ephesians 6:4 that fathers are not to provoke their children to anger. Well, giving visible time and attention to games in front of your children rather than actually giving the attention to the children will indeed provoke anger and bitterness, right? Children have a right to expect their parents' attention and love. And again, this can go the same way with the smartphone. Biblically, right, we have to remember that our goal as parents is not to preserve every hobby we had before we had children, every passion or obsession with as little sacrifice as possible. The goal is just the opposite. The goal is to be imitators of Christ, witnesses for our children to see. We as parents should be dying to ourselves. We should be sacrificing our own desires, our own wants, our own dreams for our children. 1 Corinthians 11:1, Paul says, be imitators of me as I am of Christ. Ephesians 5:1-2, therefore, be imitators of God as beloved children and walk in love as Christ loved and gave himself up for us, a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. See, imitating Christ involves daily commitment to spiritual disciplines such as prayer, reading scripture, fellowship with other believers, and not on top of, right? On top of the time that you're investing in your children. Well, how can this be done when every free moment is consumed with gaming or consumed with scrolling or consumed with taking pictures of your kids or consumed with making videos? How can your mind, your thoughts, and your attitudes be aligned with Christ if you're constantly figuring out how you're going to get your next dopamine fix, whether you get your next, you know, game in or your next social media scroll, or you check your email or you text your friends? Ephesians 5:15-16. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of time because the days are evil. Y'all, the question isn't whether you can fit gaming or social media, online gambling, emails, texts, whatever, whether you can fit those into the cracks of time while parenting. The question is, what are those cracks of time best for? Shouldn't they be for prayer, for rest, for conversation, for serving others, for reading God's word, for attentiveness in relationship, or even just silence? By maintaining our online activities and addictions and obsessions and hobbies, all that while parenting, aren't we missing out on the sanctification that occurs when we die to ourselves, when we pick up our cross and follow Christ, when we sacrifice ourselves for others? Right? Parenting is one of the most sanctifying activities in our lives. It is how God matures us. And so if we feel like parenting is terrible, maybe it's because we're not actually doing parenting right. Maybe we need to sacrifice a little bit more, find more of our purpose and the things that matter most instead of the transient and trivial things that occur in the virtual world online. And again, I argue this point because it's really easy to point out the egregious neglect of selfish gain, of a father or mother playing video games constantly on a handheld while parenting, right? It's easy to see that as selfish and just a bad parenting choice and role model. But at the end of the day, are not our smartphones just like Steam Decks and Switches in our hands? Are they not the same? As we hold them in our hands, right before our children's watchful eyes, squeeze in every dopamine hit of new information, respond instantly to every message, get a bit of stimulation here, a little bit there, right? Doesn't every personal handheld device look the same to our kids? I know we can argue that, yes, the phone is a tool, and I believe it is. Don't get me wrong, it is. But I want you to consider, do children actually see it that way? If you hand them the phone, they're not going to use it as a tool. They're going to use it as a toy. They're going to play games. They're going to watch videos. They're going to use it for entertainment. So in their minds, are they not looking at us and saying the same thing? Now, of course, we can teach our children the tool functionalities that we are doing as we're doing it. I highly recommend that. You know, hey, I'm texting your father right now. Hey, I need to pay this bill. This is what I'm doing. You know, you can vocalize that and teach children the tool-like functions on the phone. But so much of it, so much of our time is not known. Our kids don't know what we're doing. And my fear is that there is a neglect that's happening as we're constantly staring at our portable handheld devices. So now, while it's right for us, I believe, to delay our children's access to smartphones and to video games, it's important to remember that in that time of delay, our children are still watching. They are still learning from us. They are absorbing how they will then act and behave with that handheld portable device, whether it be a phone, whether it be a gaming device. They are picking up on our habits, our routines, our reflexes. Right, they're watching what we reach for when we're tired and bored, how we spend our time waiting, what gets our attention, what gives us comfort, what we go back to over and over again. And let's be honest, we all know it. It is not pleasant to see our bad habits reflected back to us in our children's behavior. Let me go back to Ephesians 5, 15 and 16. Be careful then how you walk. And that walk, that's your everyday walk. That is how you live. That is your habits. That's everything your children see. Be careful how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of the time because the days are evil. Now, I recognize it's hard to hear. It's really hard to hear that you need to make changes, and maybe you feel some conviction, and maybe you're like, yeah, Kelly, I don't really like you right now because I'm just going to ignore you and I'm going to ignore this. Don't ignore this. If you feel a little conviction, like maybe I need to really think about this, right? It's so easy to make justifications. It's easier to make justifications than it is to make changes. And I've learned a lot of this the hard way, you know, through my own mistakes, my own failings, raising Gen Z kids, you know, over the last 15 years, that I just hope that those of you who are raising Gen Alpha can accept this admonishment and this. I just implore you to just think about how your children view your screen time, your phone time, your video game time, your television time, whatever it is. And then with humility, you know, accept it and recognize maybe, and I think everyone, right? We're just not doing the best that we can. We can always, always do better. I know I can still always do better in front of my own children and my grandchildren. Now, it probably goes without saying, but Brave Parenting does not recommend handheld personal gaming devices. Now, whether they are 8, for sure not. Whether they are 12, we don't recommend any personal hand device, whether that is a phone, whether it is an iPad, nothing handheld before the age of 12. I do think if you're going to buy a game, the Switch is the better and best console that you can get. I like it because it offers a lot of offline play of the Super Mario Brothers suite of games. And so I do think it's a great option. I do think that you should prohibit the use of the portable aspect of it while children are under 12. I just don't think that under 12, children need to be face to screen, screen to face in that isolating virtual world. So the standard that we recommend is that video games, when played, are coming in a fixed location in a public area of the home. So you've got a console, it's connected to the television, right? There should be no video gaming in bedrooms. There should be no portable gaming devices, you know, brought on every car trip, every time you've got to wait or even to school, right? None of that. And also, knowing a little bit more now about Steam and its ecosystem, I also implore you to block the Steam URL from your network, whether you are blocking it on the devices themselves through the parental controls, or you're blocking the URL from your router level. Maybe you use Canopy to filter content from your web browsers, which would then blur out some of that content if they were to search up Steam games that were sexually explicit. And as much as you may hate that extra effort that it takes to do this, it just must be done. Our work as parents today is to protect from online harms, and there are so many. And so it does take a lot of extra work. It does not have to be inevitable that our kids see explicit content and graphic violence. If we do the work, we can protect them from seeing this at young ages when it is detrimentally harmful to them, right? That sexual explicit content, that's the darkness that we need to denounce. And as believers, right, we have no fellowship with darkness. So we want that darkness out of our home. We don't want to even let it in. Ephesians 5:8, going back, just read all of Ephesians 5. That's what you should do. Just read all of Ephesians 5. It says, live as children of the light, for we are the light of the Lord Jesus Christ. And that's an admonishment as much for us as adults to live as children of the light as it is for our literal children, to keep them in the light and not corrupt it by the darkness of this world. Now, as I finish up, if you have any questions about Steam specifically or about other gaming consoles, we would love to help you out. We are doing a lot of research about video games right now. And so even if you have a story that you would like to share, we'd love to hear it. You can reach out to us at podcast@braveparenting.net. Well, thanks so much for listening. I will be back next week. So until then, go and be brave.